Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, December the 17th, and it's time for our State Capitol Report. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is with us to tell us what the State Assembly and the State Senate did last week during the last floor session, I believe, of the year, and we'll talk about what passed, what didn't, and what will be taken up next year. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email if you have a question about a piece of legislation or something our state lawmakers or state government officials have been up to. Send the email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. And Sean Johnson joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
So was that was the last floor session for the Senate and the Assembly last Tuesday?
Right. The last session of 2007, they get together again in mid-January, and then they've got a couple months where they'll be in and out.
So they did some stuff. One piece of legislation, it says here, that's on its way to the governor's desk is that much talked about cable deregulation bill. Tell us about that.
Right. That's the plan that will end the longstanding practice of having local municipalities negotiate franchise deals with cable companies. After this, if assuming it becomes law, that'll be in the hands of the state. These cable companies and video companies, I guess, is the term you'd want to use now. Anybody that's offering video will go to the state, get a license pretty much for life, and the regulation will be in the hands of the state now, but it's really a deregulation bill, and the industry wanted it because they feel like it will let them expand and offer more products and be easier on them.
I know that some critics were concerned about consumer protection with this deregulation or with this Video Competition Act. Was that no longer a concern?
It's still a concern. I mean, among those who were concerned about it before, there were still lawmakers who tried to change the plan on the assembly floor this past week. One of those was Gary Hebel, and he tried to get more money for regulators who will be looking after these companies, and basically tried to amend it so that it would look like a law that recently passed in Illinois.
If this bill passes without consumer protection, within 2 years, you will have calls from your constituents asking you, how in the world could you have allowed this bill to pass without protecting us?
But pass it did.
Pass it did, and, you know, included Hebel's cut there, but he was really one of the only people who got up and spoke about this. This is, I don't want to give the wrong impression, this is something that has bipartisan support, passed with Democratic support in the Democratic-controlled Senate, passed strongly in the Assembly, and now it heads to the governor.
Yeah, and do we know what the governor is going to do?
Well, I think if you listen to his remarks, I think 99 people out of 100 would probably say he's going to approve this in some form. I will say that this governor has, surprised people on the past where he's talked about a bill somewhat favorably. I'm thinking about regulations for the rent-to-own industry in last session. There were a lot of people who thought he was going to sign these new regulations that the rent-to-own industry wanted, and that didn't happen. He vetoed that. So I think the difference this time around is that this has got strong bipartisan support. Even if he did veto it outright, it may have a veto-proof majority in the legislature. That is, lawmakers could override him if he just scrapped it. So I think an outright veto is probably out of the question. But because this spends money, it's something that he could tweak a little bit.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about that. That can also clarify a question that we had last week during the State Capitol Report on the governor's veto powers, because a governor can veto an appropriations bill, but not just a strict no money involved piece of legislation. I mean,
yeah.
Partial veto it.
Yeah, and just looking back in my notes from last week, I think it might have been Dennis. So if you're listening, Dennis called and I said, what happens if, say, the governor gets the smoking ban it has an exemption in there? Could he partial veto out the exemption? And if it's just straight up legislation like that and it doesn't spend money, then the answer is no. The governor has to give it up or down. If it spends money, You know, which the budget bill is the most common example, but there are other bills out there that are appropriations bills. Then the governor can get creative and cross out words here and there and stitch together new sentences and new meanings.
But maybe not after an April referendum. Talk about the Frankenstein veto.
Right. This is a plan that was tied up in the Democratic-controlled Senate for much of this year that would scale back the governor's partial veto powers. Right now, Wisconsin governors have the strongest veto power in the nation. They can, as we mentioned, you can cross out words, you can cross out numbers, digits, and come up with really new laws. And the governor, this governor has done that in a couple times in budgets. Tommy Thompson did that in the past. The plan that passed the Senate would say that you can't cross out words and numbers in a couple sentences to create a new sentence, basically. And so that and the interesting thing about this is even though it was held up all year about, you know, concerns that we wanted to look at all angles of this, it passed 33-0 in the Senate, which you don't see very often, especially for a controversial piece of legislation.
Well, the lawmakers don't want the governor, in essence, making law.
They did. But, you know, maybe they did this year, though. They okay. Democrats held it up long enough so that the governor could have that power in the budget.
Sean, we have to take a weather break, and then we'll talk more about the proposed constitutional amendment that would limit the governor's partial veto powers and would get rid of the so-called Frankenstein veto. This question is headed for the April ballot. We'll talk more about it after weather. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you have a thought or question for Sean about the Frankenstein veto or any other piece of state legislation that interests you, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, December the 17th. Coming up after 7:30 on this edition of the State Capitol Report, we'll talk with a group that is advocating for universal health care in Wisconsin and is a big supporter of the Healthy Wisconsin proposal, which, according to Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker, will be put on the at least the Senate's agenda for next year. We'll talk more about Healthy Wisconsin coming up after 7:30. Right now, we're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about what passed the legislature during the last floor session of the year last week. One of those items is the proposed ban on the Frankenstein veto. This a constitutional amendment, meaning voters get to really make the final say on this one, Sean.
Right, and that's where it goes next. It'll be on, assuming the Assembly approves some very minor change, or we'll call it a change. It would go on go before voters in April. And Republican Senator Dale Schultz of Richland Center, he said that he thought voters would support it like the Senate did, as long as they know what the plan does.
This doesn't mean the governors in the future are going to have their hands tied when it comes to ill-considered legislation or wasteful spending. They're going to be able to step forward and make a clear policy decision and veto things. But they're not going to be able to play games. And I think that's what most people think the veto should be about.
In fact, some of the controversy over the governor's partial veto powers, wasn't it because he would move things too from one segregated fund to the general fund? Or is that a totally separate issue?
There was a couple budgets ago he used his veto pen to do that and move money, about $400 million, out of the transportation fund into the general fund to pay for schools. He wanted to spend more in schools than the legislature, the Republican-controlled legislature at the time, would have allowed. But it happens all the time. I mean, this past budget that lawmakers and the governor just approved, they all agreed, or at least those who supported the budget agreed, to move money out of the patients' compensation fund, which is there to paid into by doctors to compensate injured patients. They decided to move that into the state's general checkbook to pay for other bills and to pay for, you know, health care for the poor.
What is the governor's office saying about this, the Frankenstein veto ban going to voters? Upset or not?
I haven't heard from the governor on this in the you know, last few weeks. I know when it was first brought up after he signed the budget, he said, you know, you better be careful with this. That power is an important thing. And in his case, he feels like he's used it in the right way. And I suppose, you know, any governor who would be put in that position, if they used it, would think the same thing. But I think those who support this change just see it as a balance of powers issue. Right now, the governor's just holding more cards when it comes to dealing with the legislature on spending bills, when they can send him a product and he can make, you know, pretty drastic changes to it with the veto pen.
Well, other issues that we need to cover that the legislature acted on last week, but let's go to a caller or two first. Pat in Richland Center. Hi, you're on the air. Pat, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was busy. Say, I'm hoping the guests can shed a little light on us, for us listeners out here. This is pretty simple, and I hope we can discuss it just a second. Senator Miller has authored a really good bill for health care in Wisconsin, and I got Senator Erpenbach, put some pressure on him, to agree to have an executive session on Miller's bill. And the significance, of course, is an executive session is everybody on that committee then has to take a vote on the record up or down. And I can't get Miller to agree to an executive session on this legislation. Now, you're really familiar with it. Doesn't that run a little counterintuitive that a senator wouldn't want to have an executive session on his own legislation?
Pat, are you talking about Senator Miller's version of universal health care?
I think it's SB 51. It was originally authored 20 years ago by Russ Feingold. And my position on it was, gee, Senator Miller, give us a chance. Even if it doesn't get out of executive session, then the folks that voted it down, then we can go to their district and say, hey, if your guy tells you that he's interested in fixing health care, he voted not even talk about this anymore. So,
Is the focus, Sean, now on this Healthy Wisconsin proposal instead?
I think so. You know, when they introduced Healthy Wisconsin, the big selling point among those who support some type of a universal health care plan was that Healthy Wisconsin included elements from a few major proposals that were floating out there, including Senator Miller's. At this point, I think Senate Democrats are just trying to make sure that they're all on the same page in terms of what universal health care plan they're behind. And, you know, I think Senator Miller's, you may be talking about that proposal in past tense now. They've sort of moved on to this Healthy Wisconsin idea, and it sounds like that's going to be the focus for them in the coming year.
Yeah, well, we'll focus on that after 7:30. Let's talk the Assembly passed a bill that would mandate hospitals provide emergency contraception to rape victims when the Assembly met last week.
Yeah, and this was another one of those where you weren't sure if it was going to get that vote or that up or down vote in the Assembly. It did, even though a majority of Republicans were against this plan. Assembly Republicans, first of all, what the basic idea behind the plan is that it would force hospitals to tell rape victims about emergency contraception and prescribe it to them or give it to them if they ask for it. And right now, a lot of hospitals in Wisconsin don't do this. But Assembly Republicans tried to change it, to amend it so that doctors and hospitals could opt out of prescribing the drug if they object on moral or religious grounds. And that's something that was pushed for by Republican Daniel Lemieux.
Without this amendment, this is actually what the bill does. It forces the belief that the morning after pill is a good product and it's proper to give. It forces that on everybody. And somebody that doesn't believe that will be forced to give that information and prescribe it.
Yeah. So essentially, he and others wanted a conscience clause this.
That's what they called it. And, the Republicans last session, they probably would have adopted something like this. But the margins are slim this year. And you had 11 Republicans voting with all but one Democrat to reject those amendments and support this bill. And well, I'm not sure that they all voted to reject the amendments, but they ultimately supported the core idea of the bill, which was a strict mandate on these hospitals that if a rape victim comes in here, you have to tell them about this emergency contraception, and somebody has to give it to them. This is something that Assembly Democrat Ann Raychuk of Balsam Lake talked about on the floor. She was a Polk County sheriff before she came to the legislature and said she'd seen firsthand in that job what rape victims go through.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not about what my moral beliefs are. This is not about what your moral beliefs are. This is about victims' rights.
And Sean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then, I mean, that's kind of the sentiment that won the day, although this plan is not, it hasn't officially passed.
It's a preliminary approval,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I call it preliminary. They approved this, substitute amendment. But the Republicans objected to, you know, giving it its final reading, basically. And so they put that off for another month. And the group that's against this, Pro-Life Wisconsin, says it's going to try to defeat it in that time. Although with the kind of vote margin it got, that would be very, very difficult.
Yeah. Running somewhat short on time here, this bill we talked about last week regarding police pay in Milwaukee did pass?
Yeah, it would. And that passed overwhelmingly, too, 33. And that would end the pay of Milwaukee police officers after they're fired. Right now, those officers go on getting paid while they appeal their firing. That's cost the city of Milwaukee $4.4 million since 1990. Milwaukee Democratic Senator Spencer Cogg says those officers, you know, that the city could have used that money for other things in that time.
Think of what the city of Milwaukee could have done with $4.4 million. We could have hired more police officers to patrol the streets, and God knows we need them.
And this law only pertained to Milwaukee. This wasn't the case with other police departments around the state.
Right. It's a special law carved out in the books for Milwaukee.
But no more.
But this is not the version of the plan that the Assembly Speaker Mike Hipch is in favor of. So this could be a situation where you see no action on this plan this session if the two sides don't compromise.
I see. So, yeah, that one just has the Senate approval,
the Senate's
not the
backing,
Assembly.
But not the Assembly's.
And the Assembly did back this important proposal to rename the holiday tree the state Christmas tree.
That was another overwhelming vote. Right now, it's called sort of, I don't want to say it's in law. It's called by most governors the holiday tree. You see a sign in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. It's called the holiday tree. So Assembly lawmakers want to change it to this official state Christmas tree, which it used to be called before 1985. You didn't hear a lot of debate on this. The only person who stood up to talk about it was Assembly Democrat Gary Sherman of Port Wing. Sherman's Jewish, but he says, you know, he calls it a Christmas tree on his own. They often come from his district. He helps look for them, and he'd never think anything of it. But he said it's a different story when the state puts that name into law.
When you pass a law that essentially tells me that I am not invited to the party, that puts into law that this does not include me, I can only feel personally threatened.
Yeah, only 30 seconds. So the Senate probably won't take this up and it'll just go away?
Yeah, spokeswoman for the majority leader said that's not going to happen. And the next time they convene, it'll be mid-January. It probably won't be on people's minds so much.
Yeah. And quickly this week, there is a Senate hearing on collective bargaining rights for UW staff. And
right.
a hearing on lifting the moratorium on nuclear power plants.
Right, which has been in place since 1983.
We'll talk about that next week. Not with you, Sean, though. Have happy holiday.
All right, thanks, Jay.
This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Monday, December the 17th. Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker says Senate Democrats plan to reintroduce a version of the universal health care plan known as Healthy Wisconsin early next year. The Senate Majority Leader says lawmakers are rewriting parts of the Healthy Wisconsin bill to ease the burden on small business owners and families earning two incomes before bringing the bill back to the committee. We will talk about the revival of the Healthy Wisconsin proposal with an advocate of this plan, or at least an advocate of a universal health care plan, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Let me welcome our guest. Robert Craig is Program and Communications Director for Citizen Action of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Great to be here.
You are happy to hear that Healthy Wisconsin will be back again before the legislature?
Absolutely. It's not a surprise given how big an issue health care is in this state. But yes, Senator Decker, the new majority leader, has been consistently committed since he became majority leader to reintroducing it. And John Erpenbach, the chair of the health committee who authored the bill, obviously has been equally strong and saying that it's going to be brought back in the early next year.
Yeah, and why do you think this is so important?
Well, health care really has become the top issue in the state. And there are a number of polls even released last week that show this. And you, in your news report, you pointed out how much families are now paying for their health insurance costs. And so we've had a near doubling of health insurance costs since the year 2000 with no end in sight. And Healthy Wisconsin's the only serious proposal, the only serious reform of the private health insurance system on the table in Madison. It had a big go-around during the budget when the state Senate passed it and put in the state budget, but the debate's not going to end until the legislature actually enacts real reform.
Yeah. So give us the thumbnail sketch of what Healthy Wisconsin would do to our health care system.
Yeah, and Sean Johnson, your reporter, talked about in the last half hour, it combined three different plans that were introduced the last legislative session that had substantial support. The single payer plan that Senator Miller introduced, the Wisconsin Health Plan, which had bipartisan support and that David Reamer developed, and then the Wisconsin Health Partnership Plan that the AFL-CIO and David Newby developed. And all of these were brought together in a plan that really synthesizes the best features of all three. So it guarantees coverage to everyone, every resident of the state that they can never lose. It also guarantees a choice of private and public health plans and a choice of doctors. And it's paid for. It has a payroll tax on employers and employees, but the result is that tax is much less than what we currently pay for health insurance. So it saves money, even though it has this large assessment on employers and employees, a Social Security-like tax. And so the result is you have a plan that would actually guarantee choice and guarantee coverage. So this got a lot of support around the state, but it also is being copied by a number of other states. You'll see it introduced or versions of it introduced in other states next year as well.
Yeah. It would be funded through this payroll tax, a $15 billion payroll tax, but you say that saves us money. Explain that more.
Well, our current reason costs are so high for health care is that the current system is very inefficient, and there are ways to save a great deal of money while covering everyone. And so this saves, for example, over $500 million a year just by having access to primary care. So there's preventive care, so people get care before they're sick, and there's chronic disease management, and chronic diseases are the highest cost in the healthcare system. It saves money about $200 million a year from prescription drug buying using the buying power of the entire state to bring costs down. It saves a huge amount in the inefficiencies in the current health insurance system. We pay over 30% of our healthcare dollars just to pay for health insurance bureaucracy in insurance companies. And this greatly reduces that as well, saves over $1 billion a year in insurance company administration, another $400 million a year in the administration hospitals and doctors' offices have to have in order to just chase the money and figure out who's going to pay for health care services.
Yeah. Now, this plan, some confuse it with that this is like a Canadian-style plan. It is not, is it?
No, it has a guarantee, so there's guaranteed coverage, but after that, it's quite different. It has a choice of private plans that compete in each area for business, and then a public option. There's a public plan people can choose in lieu of the private plans and in most cases pay a little more for. And you also choose your own doctor. So what it does is it It's a very American and Wisconsin solution to the problem. It maximizes choice, maximizes the control of families and patients and doctors, but it also guarantees coverage to every resident. So it really is a hybrid plan, you could call it, but it's a very American solution to this problem. It's not similar to the Canadian-style plan or the other plans in Western Europe.
Yeah. Now, according to an article here in the Wausau Daily Herald, Russ Decker is saying that legislators will rewrite parts of the Healthy Wisconsin bill to ease the burden on small business owners. Apparently, some small business owners are saying they can't afford the payroll tax for the health care proposed in this bill.
I mean, the small business issue is a delicate one. You know, there's been a large decrease in the number of employers that provide health insurance since 2000. Most of that decrease has come in smaller employers. They've gone down from 56% to 44% even providing coverage to their employees, and so they're the ones being most priced out of the system. The original Healthy Wisconsin bill was on a sliding scale, so smaller employers who had lower wage workers paid less, but there were still concerns that it didn't do enough in order to guarantee that small businesses could also afford it. And so the bill's going to be tweaked in that way. There are a number of ways you can do that Senator Erpenbach is looking at. But ultimately, the senators are going to try to ease the burden on small businesses while also guaranteeing coverage and making it affordable for everyone else.
And families earning two incomes apparently are questioning this?
Well, the issue is that right now, if you have, say, one employee who's a teacher or works for a large company, has good insurance, usually their spouse will take the family coverage there and not pay themselves. In the Healthy Wisconsin system, the assessment is on each wage. And so, mm-hmm. if you had two income earners in a household, there are some situations where they could end up paying more than they were before. And so Senator Erpenbach is also looking at how to alleviate that while still being able to fund the plan adequately.
Yeah, in the past, groups like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce have spoken out against Healthy Wisconsin. Here's from a news release. This is a recipe for high health care costs, higher taxes, and fewer jobs.
Well, the only real analysis that's been done of how Healthy Wisconsin would work out was done by the Lewin Group, which also did the analysis for the Families USA study that came out last week that showed that 10% of that 1.2 million Wisconsin families pay 10% or more of their income for health insurance costs. The Lewin Group found that it would save $750 million a year and $13.8 billion over 10 years. So this is a much more efficient system than the status quo. And the problem is that opponents, such as the WMC, have not offered any serious alternative. They tried to poke holes in Healthy Wisconsin, but they don't have themselves a serious reform of the private health insurance system. So what we're hoping is that if opponents cannot accept Healthy Wisconsin as it was previously written or as the new version is when it's introduced, they should at least come to the table and talk about what they would accept, because the people of Wisconsin are demanding real health care reform.
Yeah.
You know, Joy, we had a study we released about 10 days ago that showed huge disparities in what people pay across the state. People in Eau Claire pay $4,000 more a year for health insurance, mm-hmm. than people in Madison. And this produced a massive amount of press, over 50 stories, more than we've ever seen for something that we released. It just shows how hot this issue is and how local newspapers and editors are hearing this from their readers over and over again, that they want Madison really to act on this problem.
Yeah. Well, what about the concern that, well, actually, I have to take a weather break, so I'll ask that question after this weather break. Don't have time right now. Talking with Robert Craig, Program and Communications Director for Citizen Action of Wisconsin, an advocate of the Healthy Wisconsin Plan, which would provide universal health insurance for Wisconsinites through a payroll tax. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you have a question about this plan, do you like this idea or not? What questions do you have? The state Senate will take this up again early next year after tweaking it, according to the Senate's Majority Leader, Russ Decker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Monday, December the 17th. Coming up after 8, I think this should be an interesting hour. We will talk with a guest who says while dogs have always been known as man's best friend, They're not merely faithful companions, but dogs can carry us through grave illness, physical and psychological. We will talk with the author of Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs, coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about health care in Wisconsin and whether or not we want to see the bill called Healthy Wisconsin pass in Wisconsin. The State Senate's going to be taking this up early next year, and we welcome your questions about this universal health care plan for the state of Wisconsin. Our guest is a supporter of the plan, Robert Craig, Program and Communications Director for Citizen Action of Wisconsin. And before we go to the phones, Robert Craig, what I was going to ask is that Republicans in the State Assembly and others I have heard touting the answer to our health care problem is health care savings accounts. So why isn't that real reform as you stated it?
Well, couple reasons. First, what it is, it isn't much of a tax credit at all. You get a small state tax credit to add on to your current federal tax credit if you buy a health insurance policy with a high deductible. The average deductible for an HSA-related policy is $4,000 a year. And in return, you get a relatively small tax credit. Most of which, if you look, we did a report in September on this, over half of it goes to people making over $100,000 a year, and less than 20% of that tax credit goes to people who make $50,000 a year or less, who are the people who are really having trouble affording health insurance. We also believe, actually, that it will increase the number of uninsured and increase health care costs by shifting a lot of costs onto people, such as working people, such as the high deductible I mentioned before. But even if you believe in the philosophy, they haven't introduced a bill that would actually do anything substantial other than give a small tax credit. So really, the only real reform of the private health insurance system on the table right now is Healthy Wisconsin.
To the phones we go. Steve in Evansville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess I agree with the idea and principle of what you're trying to do here, but I'm a little concerned because, here again we have the working class paying for the owning class's health insurance.
And how do you figure that, Steve?
If it's a payroll tax, if you're not working for an employer, you don't pay the tax. You know, if all you have is investments that you're living off of, that you're living off of what you own, not what you do.
That's mm-hmm. actually not the case. In Healthy Wisconsin, there's an assessment, an alternative assessment for people who don't work, who are earning income, and so even on investment. So they would also pay their fair share. That's one of the best things. It's a great point, though, about Healthy Wisconsin is that people pay in a sliding scale, and it's a much fairer way to pay for health care than we have currently.
Yeah, and if you don't work at all, if you're self-employed?
Same thing. There's an alternative assessment. So mm-hmm. this was thought out very carefully to make sure that every individual is paying their fair share in a sliding scale, and every business is paying its fair share as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Steve. Jed in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Jed.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I think maybe my question is similar to Steve's in looking at people who work out of state. Same alternative assessment applied there?
Yes, Healthy Wisconsin, at least the version that was introduced earlier this year, covers all residents in the state and all employees in the state. And so if you're a resident of the state, you would, but work out of state, there'd be alternative assessment. Actually, there are currently there's intergovernmental agreements between Wisconsin and neighboring states to collect other kinds of taxes. So you could do the same thing with Healthy Wisconsin with out-of-state employers.
Yeah. A lot of concern when this was being debated over the summer that this would be a magnet for people who don't work, coming to Wisconsin.
It shows how important the health care issue is, that people think that people would take up and move, and which is a huge cost, if you think about it, mm-hmm. in order to get access to health insurance. There are a couple safeguards in this. One is that you cannot get this if you, Healthy Wisconsin for the first 12 months unless you're working. So if you move to the state without a job, you don't get it for 12 months. Once you have a job, of course, you're paying your fair share. You're paying that 4% assessment on employees. And so that's how it was set up in order to prevent people from coming just for the health insurance and not paying for it.
Thanks to Jed. Greg in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to ask if there would be any deductible to people. I was working for a company in Luck, Wisconsin, and they came up with this program, $2,500 deductible, and I got ehrlichiosis. I was bit by a deer tick, and I mean, just fixing up the damage I did, I fell through my bay window and things. When I got to the hospital, I went to the emergency room, and I paid $2,500 before they covered a penny, and it really put a crimp on my budget. It strapped me for the whole year just for that $2,500. And I was wondering if there's a deductible on this. I've been using the VA now because I refuse to pay for an insurance that doesn't help me.
It's a huge issue, deductibles. It's why so many people are paying so much of their income for health insurance, for health care costs. You know, of those people that paid that 1.2 million in the state that pay 10% or more of their income in health insurance, 90% of them have health insurance. So the health care costs are, you have high health care costs even if you have insurance right now. Healthy Wisconsin has a $300 deductible per individual and $600 per family. So it's much lower than what most people have right now. In addition, you know, if you have a catastrophic event, you end up with a $300 debt. That even if you're unable to pay that, that's far less of an obligation than right now, where you can end up tens of thousands of dollars in debt just because of one medical incident.
Yeah. Greg, thanks very much for the call. I've also heard criticism that Healthy Wisconsin does little or nothing to actually control the cost of health care, that you know, if we're all covered, we're all going to, you know, run to the doctor for every little ailment and, you know, that sort of thing.
I mean, I strongly disagree. That's been stated over and over again, but I strongly disagree with that. If you look at Healthy Wisconsin, it by bulk purchasing power for prescription drugs, it reduces costs. It reduces costs tremendously by having people have direct access to primary care through a doctor so that you have preventive care. And we deal with situations before they become more serious, and we manage chronic diseases more easily. There's actually no deductible for preventive care or for chronic disease management. So that saves a tremendous amount of money. In addition, there is competition built into the plan so that private insurers are competing for the business, and the ones that are lower cost will cost people less. Will be tier one plans, you'll have no premium. That is the lower cost, high quality plans. If a plan is more expensive, you'll pay the difference. So there's a real incentive for insurance providers, or it'll be healthcare networks in this case, to actually provide high quality care at the lowest cost. Otherwise, they'll lose business. And so it really does correct the market a great deal. Right now, the health insurance market and the healthcare market in general is entirely dysfunctional. Higher cost is not punished in this market at all. It's actually rewarded, and it drives costs up for everyone.
Yeah, and who decides if controversial treatment X is covered or not?
Well, the way it's structured is it covers all medically necessary care and then creates an independent board that manages the plan. And so based on research and evidence, the plan might be adjusted over time. It works the same way as the state employees plan does right now with a similar board. And so we anticipate it covering everything there's a medical consensus around, and certainly even experimental things that where there's a strong medical consensus that it's probably valuable.
Dick in La Crosse, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. We keep talking about everybody's got the right to health care. If everybody's got the right, health care should be deductible from the first penny. I don't understand why it's not. People have great jobs, of course, can put a lot of money away, and the people that have lesser pay never get a write-off unless it goes over a certain percentage of their income. It just makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. I see his point about the present system. That is to say, one way to try to go at this would be to make to create more tax credits to get health insurance. The problem is that just isn't enough given how expensive health insurance is. We need more fundamental reform of the entire health insurance system in order to actually guarantee access for everyone. So what the caller is talking about would certainly be a step towards affordability, but it wouldn't really get at the fundamental causes of the problem.
Yeah. And Dee Dee and Madison, hi, you're on the
air. Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes. Two reasons why single-payer is infinitely, which is what the rest of the world, rest of the developed countries have that you just scorned. We need to bring down the cost of health care so that our businesses can compete with the businesses from all over the world where they do have health care that costs less. If we take the profit out of it, we could bring the cost down. The second reason is your bill, the compromise bill, does not help seniors.
Yeah, all right, and we're almost out of time, Dee Dee. Can you address this Healthy Wisconsin and seniors, and also why she thinks single payer would be much better?
Sure. Single payer, the issue with that is whether it's ever achievable politically in the United States. The leading single payer advocates in the state of Wisconsin are supporting Healthy Wisconsin because they think it's an extremely good plan that is also could be enacted in the near term. As far as seniors, there was a discussion originally about including wraparound coverage for Medicare. And the problem is that that's another huge expense, and Healthy Wisconsin was already highly controversial because of the amount of assessment involved. And so the decision was made to think about that down the road. If you establish Healthy Wisconsin, that could be another step if there was strong public support for it. But at this point, it didn't take on the senior issue.
Yeah, only a minute to go. Do you think 2008 will be the year for major health care reform in Wisconsin?
I think if nothing happens in 2008, there'll be a huge debate that it's going to be the issue in the 2009 elections, both for president and for state legislature, and then 2009 will be the year. So it's either going to be 2008 or 2009, one of the two.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Robert Craig, Program and Communications Director for Citizen Action of Wisconsin. If you'd like a CD of this particular program or any of our talk shows on Wisconsin Public Radio, you can call the radio store. That number is 1-800-747-7444. We also archive all of our talk shows on our website, so you can listen to them through your computer at your convenience, wpr.org. That's our website. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.